is it?
It's Drew.
Oh, hi, Drew. Hold on. Hold on. What's up?
Can I come in?
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Okay, come on in. Come on. Are you okay?
No.
What
no.
happened? What's wrong?
I don't know. I watched a video, and there's this thing I need to show you. It might gross you out.
Is it on the internet?
No. It's in my stomach. I'm just going to lift up my shirt. And I need your opinion on if I should get this looked at.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
Sure.
All right, here it is.
Oh. Oh. Huh.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourchive, our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
So I feel like I should maybe, I don't know, set the scene for this a little bit.
Well, first you have to tell everyone that this is the retrospectacle.
That's true.
For 1983.
Right. As we are wont to do every couple months, we look back at a movie that came out 30 years ago.
We fudged the rules with the last movie.
We did, for your benefit.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what you're going to do later on this year when it's your turn to pick again and you have to choose from 1983, because I'm not going to allow you to do another 1993 movie.
Yeah.
Unless you do Schindler's List, because that would be sort of a bookend to Jurassic Park.
Damn it.
Yeah, I know. Girl in the Red Coat, right?
Yeah, that's the best part.
So it's 1983, a film from 1983. I have selected the film Videodrome.
Videodrome.
Directed by David Cronenberg. So if you want to watch Videodrome, I mean, obviously we didn't give you any heads up that that's what we're talking about this week. So you can, if you want to stop
maybe
this
we
now.
Maybe we should do that more
like
often.
Prior, like announce, hey, we're talking about this.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea. That way people will have listened or have seen the movie in time when this episode's released. We'll do that for next time.
Okay.
And well, actually, we can do that now because I can announce
people
tonight.
People could watch it.
Yeah. You have a couple
tomorrow.
Of days.
Yeah.
I'll just post the trailer on the Facebook page.
Videodrome.
Yeah. Channel 83.
Available.
Turn to channel 83 and watch Videodrome.
Yeah. But really, you can't do that. So it's available on Instant Video.
But really, you can't do that.
Amazon has it to rent.
Yeah.
On Instant Video.
As does
Video.
iTunes. There are probably other places as well.
Yeah.
If you haven't. Yeah. If you
it
haven't.
Might, it might,
it
the
yet.
Whole thing might be on YouTube.
It probably is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Who knows?
So, yeah, if you haven't watched it yet and you want to watch it before we talk about it, you can go do that now. If you already did that, good. Welcome back.
And I will encourage you to watch it.
Oh.
Before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it'll be more relevant.
And
the
also,
conversation will
in
make
general,
a lot more.
I'll encourage you to watch it.
Thank you. I think I will. Hold on. I'll be right back.
I'll wait here.
Good movie.
Yeah.
So, Videodrome. I wanted to watch
Videodrome.
This again.
Videodrome.
Videodrome. Listen, I love the way James Woods says Videodrome.
How does he say it?
He like sort of rushes through it. He's like, what can you tell me about Videodrome?
What can you tell me about Videodrome?
Videodrome.
Can you do a James Woods impression?
Have you seen Videodrome? I feel like I need a cigarette.
Yeah.
I need a cigarette.
You got to kind of pull your...
I need a terrible suit.
You have to take your voice by the scruff. Pull it back. Pull it back up.
Right? Yeah. Gotta reach back in there.
You know, backing up. You gotta talk kind of fast.
Yeah, you gotta talk a little bit fast.
Yeah, talk a little fast. Yeah,
I gotta make my lips work for me. I gotta say, Videodrome.
Yeah, Videodrome.
Videodrome.
Videodrome. Videodrome. What can you tell me about Videodrome?
We just say that. We just say
What's
that a lot.
What's the guy's name?
His
guy in the.
Dr. Oblivion?
No. His guy's.
Oh, Harlan?
Harlan.
What can you tell me about
Videodrome? Did you record Videodrome?
Harlan, you're the best pirate in town. You're the best pilot. You're the best pirate in Toronto.
Patron. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are getting ahead of ourselves.
What did you say?
So I wanted to revisit this movie. I had there were a few selections. 1983 was not as
bountiful.
bountiful, good word, with great, memorable movies, or movies that have stood the test of time in the way that many of the movies from 1982 did, which was when we started this whole thing.
Yeah.
It was the series.
And it was our idea. We didn't get it from anyone else.
That's right. Just like nobody did a special thing on the summer of 1983 movies, right?
Exactly.
So 1983, not as much to choose from if you're looking for long-lasting, continuously relevant movies, or movies that have stood the test of time well. However, it certainly had its eccentricities, and this is no exception.
What did we start this?
BMX Bandits.
That's what we started with.
That was 1983, man. The first Retro Spectacular.
Yes!
Yeah. So, I mean, and that puts it in good context, right?
I kind of feel bad about Jurassic Park.
Why?
It's a phenomenal movie, but not in the way that these two movies are.
It's not on par with with BMX Bandits
or
and Videodrome.
Videodrome, yeah.
It's true. It's true. It is not on par with either of those films. So we started with BMX Bandits. We're continuing the Videodrome.
Yeah.
Which was my pick for a couple of reasons. One, I haven't seen it in about 10 years.
Okay.
Two, I wanted to go back to the era that this movie takes place in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of movies that came out in 1983 that feel a little more timeless,
or feel like they're set before 83.
That's true. Yeah,
82.
So some of the other options that we looked at, we'll lay them out there.
Yeah, okay,
83.
Well, and they still might get watched because I have a pick left.
That's true. So you may have these to look forward to. Jaws 3, mm-hmm. which was released in 3D. Superman 3 mm-hmm. with Richard Pryor and that other guy who plays Superman. War Games was another one that I considered. Valley Girl, which is pretty dated. That one definitely does evoke 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And Sleepaway Camp was another one. Mm. Sleepaway Camp in particular, I feel, is very timeless. That movie could take place at any time. It's set at a camp. I mean, you know, granted there are no cell phones there, so it probably wouldn't
Maybe
be like a modern day camp. But
just said no cell phones.
Yeah, they took them away. They confiscated them. Superman 3, other than some of the trappings, you know, that could be timeless,
sure.
right? Videodrome, in particular, because of its subject matter, is fixed on a very specific point in time.
Yeah.
When VHS tapes were the...
Or Betamax. The
Cats Meow. Or Super VHS,
yeah.
SVHS.
Whatever.
Betamax, all these different... I love that question that comes up in Videodrome at
oh,
one point
what
where
format?
Somebody says, what format do you want this in?
I wish
what
that,
format would you like this
I
response
wish that,
in?
Wouldn't it be great if that stayed a relevant question?
Yes.
Like if all of those formats had remained.
Yeah. If VHS had not become this dominant player in the home video market.
Yeah.
Would you have some people, like, would your home be a Betamax home? Would it be an SVHS home, you know? You'd never know. Like, if you were going to somebody's house
mm-hmm.
and you'd never been there before, you could never
say.
You'd be like, I don't know if they can play this VHS cassette of A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon.
In a way, it's become relevant again because now the question is DVD or Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. Or streaming, like, you know, like can I assume that this person has Netflix?
I can't.
Or do they have something else? Do they have Amazon?
Yeah.
So we watched this. We both streamed this movie, which is sort of ironic in a way.
Oh, the signal.
Yes. We got a signal.
I streamed it into my spine.
Wow.
Yeah.
You really went for it.
Yeah.
I like it. I like the enthusiasm.
Oh.
And actually, now that I think about this, I've never seen this movie in the proper, quote-unquote, proper format.
On VHS?
I've never seen it on VHS.
Hmm.
The first time I watched it was on DVD, projected via a tricolor projector in a class auditorium at Webster University.
Oh, wow.
As part of a Friday night science fiction film class.
Oh, that's not... Oh, a class.
Class.
Wow.
Yeah. I was going to school on Friday nights from 5:30 to 9:30, and it was the best class.
Wow.
It was my favorite class the entire time I was in school.
What was that book?
Video Hound's Guide to Cult Picks and Trash Flicks or whatever. Yeah.
Creamy Cakes or whatever. That was the book you had to get for it.
Yeah. everybody had that book.
Yeah.
There was no textbook.
No.
We as I recall, we would watch a movie every week. There would be a little bit of discussion leading up to the movie, a little bit of discussion after the movie, and then we would write a paper about it. And I don't really remember what I wrote about Videodrome.
Videodrome.
What can you tell me about Videodrome? Tell me about Videodrome. What format would you like your response in?
What can you tell me about Videodrome?
So I saw Videodrome in that class. I'd never seen it before. I'd heard of it. I'd seen the box at the video store.
Yeah.
But I never really... I wasn't sure what to make of it, you know? It wasn't really promoted as a horror movie. It wasn't really promoted as a science fiction movie, which is, I think, appropriate because it's really neither of those. It's something else.
I think I read that they had trouble figuring out how to promote it, you know? That if... It didn't hit any one category sort of full force, you know. It definitely had moments, you know, that evoked the one or the other genre, but
yeah, it pulls elements from a lot of those.
Yeah,
but it does. It's hard to pigeonhole. I guess it's a drama. I guess it's
if I had to put it into a category, I think I'd go with sci-fi.
I think that's the most applicable.
Yeah,
I like. I think it's Wikipedia describes it as science fiction body horror.
Body horror,
which I guess
get that. Yeah,
that to me seems sort of like a genre onto David Cronenberg entirely. Like if you looked up, if there was a place that a video store that had a body horror section, like if you would go there and it would be all David Cronenberg's movies, because that guy, I mean, he trades in body horror if there is such a thing as body horror.
I think this is the only Cronenberg movie I've seen.
I'm not entirely surprised by that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of what I would say, like, a penetration of the mass market.
Yeah.
But he has made some fairly big-budget and well-known movies. He made The Fly, probably his biggest movie. That's the remake with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Which we may have talked about before.
Maybe.
It's a great movie.
Some of the gross aspects.
It's very gross. And a lot of David Cronenberg's stuff is...
a gross scene, but I haven't seen the whole movie.
The Fly is grosser than Videodrome. So if you're concerned if you're concerned about watching Videodrome, you're thinking, oh, man, this sounds gross.
Yeah.
If you've seen The Fly, you can handle Videodrome.
Okay.
He did Dead Ringers with Jeremy Irons, which was the twins. Existence, which is a really good kind of a continuation of some of the themes that he addresses.
Yeah, that's what I read.
Videodrome. Existence sort of takes it to the next level. Uh-huh. Like Videodrome feels somewhat insular, like it's really just this one dude's experience. Whereas Existence sort of takes it broader and makes it more of like a whole world gone mad kind of thing.
What can you tell me about Existence,
Harlan? Harlan, have you downloaded Existence? what are some other good David Cronenberg movies? Shivers is, I think, one of his first ones.
Okay.
Rabid. These are like 70s low-budget horror movies. Scanners is another one of his
Scanners,
big ones.
Yeah.
Which has a famous scene, the head explosion.
Yeah. You can find that GIF.
Yeah. It's great.
If you search Scanners head explosion GIF.
Yeah, or just probably just Scanner's GIF.
Yeah, Scanner's GIF.
Because nobody's making GIFs of anything else in that movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of that scene...
In Scanners,
the head explosion scene. I remember first discovering that. The first time I saw that movie, I was probably 10 or 12, and I remember taking it over to a friend's house and putting it in and being like, okay, you guys got to watch this scene. We don't have to watch the rest of the movie. We just got to watch this scene.
Yeah.
And we watched the head explosion, and then we rewind it, and we watch it again, and we watch it again. And then we like each pick a quadrant, and we're like, okay, you focus on this corner of the screen, and you focus on this corner of the screen. And we would try to figure out like what pieces of this guy's face we could tell which were going in each direction. That has nothing to do with video.
Yeah.
But it does play into the whole VHS video recording element, which is at the heart of Videodrome.
Oh,
Should we do a synopsis?
I think that's probably a good idea.
We gave notice that this is the movie, but probably not, you know, for a lot of people, probably not enough notice.
Possibly.
And maybe you don't even
You mean like prior to the release of the episode?
Yeah. And maybe you don't even want to watch this movie after seeing the trailer, and that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. So the synopsis, our main character is Max Wren.
Yeah.
Yeah, Max Wren, played by James Woods. And I really want to see James Woods in more movies.
I do too. I love him.
He had a moment, I think, you know, and in the 90s even.
Early 90s.
Sort of doing well. He had a movie with Michael J. Fox, I think, didn't he?
The Hard Way.
Yeah, and where
yes.
Michael J. Fox is an actor.
Yes, who's learning to be a cop.
A cop.
Yeah. And James Woods is the cop.
Yeah, and
James Woods makes a great cop.
He does. He does. And his one of his other more notable roles is as Hades in the Disney film Hercules.
Oh, that's right. He did do that.
And
I forgot all about that.
It looks like they just drew him.
Yeah.
As Hades.
That's a good adaptation of a characteristic.
Yeah.
A person's characteristics. Yeah.
Probably not his two best works, but the two that I remember most.
Yeah. He was also in Vampires, John Carpenter's Vampires.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Yeah, he plays sort of basically like a Snake Plissken with vampires.
Oh, yes.
He's great. Like, he wears like leather and all black, and he walks around shooting crossbows at vampires.
Excellent. So that's to me a huge point in this movie's favor is James Woods.
Yeah. And it's pretty much all about James Woods. I mean, there are some side players, but he's in like virtually every scene. Yeah.
Then you have Deborah
Harry. Deborah Harry. Not Debbie Harry.
Deborah.
Because now she's legit. Now she's in Hollywood movies. Yeah.
Of the band Blondie.
Blondie.
And I you know, I've never gotten into Blondie or tried to. And so I had no real assumptions around Deborah Harry, but she was pretty good. I mean, in the movie,
she does a good job.
She plays the character well, and I think this movie pretty much does it open with the No, it opens with Videodrome, doesn't it?
No, well, it opens
like
with
him coming into the.
It opens with a broadcast. Well, his tape. He gets his memos via videotape, basically.
Like, you've got a meeting today, and you've got this.
Yeah.
Good morning.
So he is the CEO of a low budget, local cable station in Toronto.
Civic
TV, channel 83, cable 12.
Yeah.
I don't understand the cable 12 thing, but. That's what it's called, and this I won't talk about this too much, but something that's really apparent. I love the way in various scenes. Most of this stuff happens indoors. Most of the scenes in the movie happen indoors, but there are a couple of exteriors, and they all show. I think in every one of them, there's this great contrast of like these gleaming skyscrapers in the background. And this really sort of rundown area in the foreground. And that's where all the action that happens, where it takes place. Yeah. And I love that juxtaposition. And I still don't understand it.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it since watching this movie again. And I really don't get what was going on there. I don't know what they were trying to say.
Right.
But I thought that was interesting. And it's, I guess, a side of Toronto that I'm not used to seeing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Usually Toronto, it's all very...
It's got some seedy areas, though.
Apparently, yeah.
At least, and I think it still does.
I was there not too long ago,
and we sort of walked around the city.
Huh.
There are a few areas that felt kind of sketchy.
I've never been. I've always wanted to go. I would love to go, especially after Forever Night, that show about the vampire cop. That was said in Toronto.
It's
filmed in Toronto. That's neither here nor there. So Toronto.
He's in
Channel
Toronto,
83.
Yeah, I won't do a detailed sort of blow-by-blow, but... He wakes up to video. He goes and he checks in on his has a meeting with some people to buy a television show. You sort of get a sense for who he is and what his job is, and also what he's sort of interested in pushing.
His attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what he's looking for.
Yeah, and for his station.
Yeah.
And it's sort of an edgy station in that, you know, he pushes shows that are violent, sexually graphic. Well, sexually graphic or sort of
yeah,
soft,
I mean, I think so.
More softcore, yeah, pornographic.
But I mean, for the time and for
yeah.
the cable market,
yeah,
yeah. It, what he's doing is pushing boundaries. He's a bottom feeder, really. The
yeah.
station is a bottom feeder. They can't compete. They have no money.
Right.
They can't succeed on the types of things that regular big cable networks
yeah.
or big channels will succeed on. So he's taking the scraps. The stuff that can't be seen anywhere else because it is too violent or because
yeah.
it is too sexual. And he's showing that. He's hunting for that stuff.
But he also believes he claims this is what people want.
Yeah, yeah. He's providing a service to yeah. people. Yeah. And I this didn't occur to me the first time I saw it, but it was really in my mind as I was watching this now. He has the best job.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like you watch movies and you're like, oh, that guy's got the best job.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that. But he really does have the best job. Now, maybe I wouldn't necessarily want to work at Channel 83.
Okay.
But I mean, he has total freedom, basically.
Yeah.
You know, there is no, it's in Canada. There may be some kind of regulation
yeah.
board or something, but you don't get any sense that he's under any kind of censorship.
Yeah, yeah.
He can do whatever he wants.
He's somewhat criticized, but that's about the extent
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, yeah, there's some public criticism, but
yeah.
but he basically blows that off, you
yeah.
know? And he says, "Look, if nobody watched it,
they don't want to watch it.
We wouldn't
yeah.
have it." Yeah. So, I mean, he is basically he sees himself as a public servant.
Yeah.
And no one is telling him what he can or can't do.
Yeah.
And he has the final say on pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And he has not only a network of people providing him this the material.
Yeah.
But he also has a affiliate who actively works to find stuff that can't be found
yeah.
or, you know, isn't supposed to be found.
Harlan.
So he's
We meet
in a
Harlan.
Really great situation for what he does.
Yeah, he goes into the basement of Civic TV
83, Channel 83, Cable 12,
and that's where we meet Harlan, who is his engineer guy, and who's finding all the unfindable stuff that's being broadcast. Right.
Yeah.
And he's the one who discovers Videodrome. Right. And this
yes.
is and. He tells Max, he sort of shows Max what they found overnight, you know,
mm-hmm.
and Max's like, what is this? This is great. Wow. Look at this. You've seen this?
Videodrome. What can you tell me about Videodrome?
What is this?
Can we get this for Channel 83, Cable 12?
Where's this coming from?
So he figures out.
Well, let's describe. So Videodrome, he watches this broadcast and it's essentially seems to be a person being tortured.
Yeah.
And
it's a mock real torture
yeah.
sequence. Like it's shot as though it's real, but he assumes that it is
yeah, fake.
Fake, right.
Yeah.
And he only catches a bit of it in that first glimpse. Like
yeah.
they're only able to unscramble the signal for like 53 seconds
this.
Or something.
Give me more of this.
Yeah. Can you get me more Videodrome?
Yeah, Videodrome. Tell me more. So he tasks Harlan, he's like, get more of this stuff, you know. This looks great. This is great
yeah.
stuff. He goes and he does an interview on television, and that's where he meets Deborah Harry.
Yes.
Who's the other guest in the interview, along with Brian Oblivion.
Yeah. Who's only
he
seen...
will only appear
on television.
Yeah, and let's
on television.
Right. Let's clarify what we mean. What you are seeing when you watch this interview show with it has a host and it has Max Wren, James Woods.
Yeah.
And
Deborah Harry, who is what is her name?
Nikki Brandt.
Yeah.
You see those two in chairs on the show, on the set, and then next to them, between the host and Max Wren, right?
Yeah.
Is a television set which is broadcasting an image of Brian Oblivion.
Yes.
So he will only appear on TV. On TV,
who looks like he looks like the guy whose head blows up in Scanners.
Oh.
I don't. I'll have to look and see if that's actually him. Yeah. So he's only seen. He only appears in
yeah.
public,
and
on
that,
a recording on television.
And that movie, or that movie, that moment in the movie is sort of throwaway. You just kind of like introduced to him.
Yeah. He gives like a monologue. Yeah. He speaks about the dangers of television obsession.
And in that scene, Max Wren asks Nikki Brandt out on a date.
Yeah.
Which she says okay.
Which is great because they set that up initially. Like you think that they're going to be like antagonists. Yeah. And like the it's almost like the show host is trying to make them antagonists.
Yeah.
And she loses control of the situation because they sort of, you know, go into their own world and basically
have small talk and stuff. Yeah.
Strike up a conversation.
So they start to see each other. They have a relationship. We sort of learn that Nikki's kind of on the edge, kind of a weird girl, right?
Yeah. Like she's into always some, looking for really avant-garde experiences and material.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly sexual, right?
Yeah.
Like, and things that Max is open to but not necessarily used to, right?
Like, yeah. Well, he's not, I get the sense he's not a participant. You know, he's an observer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll watch anything.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, he seems sort of asexual in a way.
And this is the first time maybe that he's ever participated.
Yeah.
Right, with Nikki Brandt.
Yeah. Ooh, I think we just stumbled upon another reading of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he tells Nikki about Videodrome, and Harlan, meanwhile, has gotten the signal. He's like, yeah, I got it. Don't worry. We can see the whole thing now. And there was a suspicion that it was being broadcast from
Malaysia. Somewhere in Malaysia.
But it turns out, oh my gosh, it's actually in Pittsburgh.
In the USA.
Whoa.
I love how they actually throws that in there. Yeah. Pittsburgh, USA.
What can you tell me about Videodrome? And Max, like, he talks to one of his agents that sort of brings in different shows, and he's like, she brings in some show he doesn't want.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't want this stuff. There's nothing.
Right? What can you tell me about Videodrome?
What can you tell me about Videodrome? And she's like, I'll talk to some people. I'll see what we can find out. Right. So she goes off. He's sort of doing his thing with, Nikki, and he shows Nikki the Videodrome broadcast. She's totally into it.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to Pittsburgh to get on Videodrome to audition. And he warns her. He's like, don't do it. You don't know these. You know, this is serious stuff. Like,
yeah.
You know, this is a whole new level, so don't do it. But she leaves. She goes. But not before proving that she's up for it by burning herself with a cigarette.
Yes.
And from there, things start to get kind of nuts.
That's really the last point at which you think maybe this is all a credible reality.
Yeah.
After that, it starts to get questionable. I think at that point is when we meet Bianca, who is the administrator of the Cathode Ray Ministry.
Yeah.
Which is, it's like a homeless shelter, but the people there are not seeking shelter so much as they are seeking access to television.
It seemed to me it was akin to a soup kitchen.
Yeah,
but
yeah, exactly.
Of food, it's
they're providing television.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but think throughout this movie, we'll talk about this a little bit more later. I couldn't help but think how prescient this movie was in a lot of ways, but just sort of skewed a little bit. Like it got the details wrong, but it got the essence right in its predictions of like society and where culture's going.
Yeah.
Certainly in the subject matter of Videodrome and the access to subcultures, you know, and people looking for things.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has certainly exploded thanks to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But the part with the sort of soup kitchen access to the TV totally reminded me of like an internet cafe.
Yeah.
Especially in the early days of internet access, like the mid to late 90s, you know.
Yeah.
It physically, it looked to me a lot like some internet cafes I've been into. that was a good laugh.
Max Wren meets Bianca Oblivion, daughter of
Brian
Oblivion, who only appears on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And because his agent, who we talked about earlier, has informed him that tell him that Brian Oblivion...
She traces it back to
him. Brian Oblivion. Yeah. Videodrome is you got to talk to Brian Oblivion.
Yeah, he's the one you want to talk to about it.
So he goes and he's like, I want to talk to Brian Oblivion. Tell me, what do you know about Videodrome? Right?
Yeah.
And she's like, my father only speaks to people through video. This is where the line, what format would you like?
Yeah, yeah. Right? What format would you like your response in?
I want to talk to him. That's his response. But he's like, just tell him I know about Videodrome. You know, and he walks out. and he's starting to have his hallucinations at this point, right?
Yeah. He's getting an itch. He's got an itch on
his stomach. Something's weird there. Yeah, and he's having these hallucinations. He's starting to see Nikki when she's not there or in place of other people, right? He has a particular episode with the television where it looks all weird and sort of moving.
Like it's alive.
Yeah, and then his assistant who comes over to drop off his tape, his memo in the morning that he'll watch. And he sort of envisions that she's Nikki.
Yeah.
and attacks her, like sort of, you know, slaps her or something. And then he jolts back into reality and he's like, sorry, I'm sorry about that.
Sorry I hit you, but what can you tell me about Videodrome?
Yeah. She's like, you didn't hit me. It's like, oh, I know. I hit you with all that information. Right?
Like, that was a great recovery.
It was. And anyway, so he's starting to have these weird hallucinations, getting progressively weirder as the movie goes. The itch on his stomach eventually becomes a lot more than an itch, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we should talk about some of this stuff, just in case you haven't seen it. Well, we did. Or we said we're going to spoil this.
Yeah, we'll spoil effectively. So the sequence of events starts to get hazy for me at this point, but. All this time, he's watching Videodrome, right? Mm-hmm. Whichever broadcast that Harlan has been able to get.
Yeah.
And he does eventually get a response back from... in fact, this is actually right before What's-Her-Face comes to give him his memo. Mm-hmm. He gets a response from Brian Oblivion, and initially it seems like a canned response, but then Brian Oblivion addresses Max directly, and... he has his hallucinations, and then when does the stomach thing happen?
It's in that course of that, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's the next set of hallucinations.
So he goes back to, does he go back to Bianca? Bianca?
Bianca. Yeah.
Before or after the stomach thing?
Before.
So he's watched the response and he's like, whatever, Brian Oblivion. What do you know about Videodrome? And she's like, my dad, Brian Oblivion died.
Yeah.
The only way he lives on now is through these videotapes, which he was recording.
As that archive, thousands and thousands of videotapes.
And he recorded them like every, you know, like constantly, you know,
six or seven a day.
Because he developed a tumor.
Yes.
Right? And he's the one who discovered Videodrome.
Yes.
And he and his partners, who then wanted to exploit Videodrome, right?
Yes, the Spectacular Optical Corporation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So he split from them.
Yeah.
The implication is that either the tumor that originated from mm-hmm. Videodrome killed him, or this company had him killed somehow. Right. You know, and it's never explicitly said, but
exactly. And the tumor, was he? So I'm still trying to remember. Videodrome itself comes from what? I'm not sure they actually explained it in the movie.
Yeah, no. So basically, the Videodrome signal,
mm-hmm.
it creates, it manipulates your body.
Yeah,
it manipulates you physically and mentally.
Yeah,
To the point that you become you not only well. I don't know. Like, you can assume that physically Videodrome affects you. It manipulates your actual physique.
Yeah.
Or you could read it as your mind is so compromised that you think Videodrome has affected your body.
And it makes that this reminds me, it sort of makes your hallucinations real.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's never stated explicitly whether that's true or not.
Right. It could be real to you in your mind that your hallucinations are coming true.
But the results of things that you do as a result of Videodrome are real.
Yes.
Everything, all the consequences happen.
Yes.
But what we're seeing versus what Max Wren is seeing, we don't know which is the reality.
In the end, it seems to me to suggest that whatever the end result is that Videodrome has put into your mind, mm-hmm. like whatever goal you're pursuing in your mind, you will physically somehow bring that to be.
Yeah, definitely.
That's essentially what happens.
What you perceive is what it is, right?
Yeah. So basically, the split. I think we're actually making this more complicated than it was. But so the founders of Videodrome, Brian Oblivion and the Spectacular Optical Corporation, they split because Brian Oblivion wanted to use it for good, and the Spectacular Optical Corporation wanted to use it for evil, or not necessarily evil, but to manipulate people, which is ultimately what ends up happening to Max.
Right.
He becomes manipulated first by the Optical Corporation and then by Bianca Oblivion. And in the course of doing so, he does lots of terrible things,
mm-hmm.
And lots of people end up dead.
Yep.
And then in the end, he...
Yeah, spoiler alert. Seriously.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
This is as spoiler as you can spoiler.
We're going to tell you can very, spoil this video is going to be the very end of the movie, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
In the very end of the movie, he kills himself.
Yes. Both in Videodrome and in the real world. Yeah.
So some of the things we sort of glossed over are what I think make this feel more like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that are, those are sort of the gruesome physical effects that Videodrome has on Max.
Mm-hmm.
The most gruesome perhaps being his stomach cavity.
Yes. His vagina like video cassette
intake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
orifice.
It is very, very, very vaginal.
It's gross.
I mean, there's no other way to say it.
Not really, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say it's like a sarlacc pit.
But it's not even like that.
It's not. It's more like a vagina.
and this is how he's programmed.
Yeah.
Right? Like they kind of jam a tape in there. He also put a gun in there at one point.
Yes. Yeah, that sort of precedes all of his violent outbursts. He has a gun, and you get the sense that he's paranoid.
Yep.
And he's sort of scratching, using the gun to scratch his stomach. And then he's like, oh, I got a hole down there.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I should put the gun in there.
Yeah, which he does.
Yes.
And then it seals up.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's got a gun in his tummy.
Yeah.
For
which you could say is sort of their implication that, you know, oh, now he's violent because he's got a gun inside of him.
He later on removes the gun.
Mm-hmm.
He's been programmed at this point.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out, again, that Harlan is working.
Oh, yeah, we forgot about that part.
He's working for Spectacular Optical.
He's a plant.
Yeah. And
Videodrome was a plant all along.
And he himself has not watched Videodrome. He simply set it up for Max Wren to watch it,
mm-hmm.
so that what's his name? What's the bad guy name?
Oh, it's yeah, like, yeah. The Optical Corporation.
The personification of Spectacular Optical.
Barry Convex.
Barry Convex.
Which is such an awesome, awesome name.
So what we should say is that Spectacular Optical makes glasses.
Yes.
Eyeglasses.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Convex. Huh?
I didn't even think Lens. About that.
So he's the one who seemingly seems to put out an olive branch to Max Wren. He's like, look, I know about Videodrome, obviously, because I was there when Brown Oblivion found it and
yeah.
whatever. Every test subject that has watched Videodrome has died of the brain tumor. So you're the only one who's lived this long, and we want to study you so we can find out, maybe we can fix it.
Right.
And so they put this awesome helmet on him.
Yes. That helmet is badass.
It's going to record his hallucinations. Right. In fact, what they're doing is manipulating him.
Yeah.
And they take a Betamax cassette, and they put it into his stomach hole. And that programs him to do the things they want him to do, right?
Yeah.
So then what they want him to do is to kill his partners at Civic TV.
Right.
Right? I can't remember why.
Well, I think the ultimate goal is to take over the world, basically, using Videodrome,
mm-hmm.
right? And so sort of the first stage of that is Channel 83. Everybody who watched Channel 83 is going to, become Videodrome slaves, right?
Yeah.
So in order to do that, he needs to get all of the opposition out of the way. There can't be any question of whether or not they're going to broadcast Videodrome.
So he goes... He goes back to the station, and this is where, like, one of the coolest scenes, in my opinion, occurs, where he lifts up his shirt, and his stomach hole is there, and he reaches in, he pulls out the gun that he put in there earlier, right? And the gun, there's a sequence, a special effects sequence, where the gun becomes fused to his hand in a rather gruesome way, where, like, these machine tendrils kind of burst out of his fingertips and then drill through the pad of his hand, right?
Yeah, so into his like vascular system.
Yeah,
like into his veins and
around the gun itself. So like now, by the end of it, his right hand is now this like blob, this mass of gun covered with skin, and it's very, very strange.
Yeah,
but pretty cool special effects sequence.
Yeah.
And again, you're like, is this happening? Is he imagining it? You know, because when he proceeds into the station, he's got the gun under his jacket, and when you see him kill the guys, it's just him holding a gun, right?
Right.
But you also see him later killing somebody with the whole hand thing.
The machine hand. Yeah. Yeah.
He kills them. Well, we don't need to get into the, we already told you this.
So yeah.
In the end, he sort of kills a bunch of people. He's manipulated first by Spectacular Optical, then by Bianca, who he tries to kill, and she sort of like turns him around and says, "No, you go kill the
kill Videodrome.
Go kill Convex. Yeah.
Yeah,
kill Videodrome. Exactly.
Yeah, death to Videodrome.
Yeah,
long live the new flesh.
Which becomes a tagline, and I don't get it.
Cigarette and kiss me on the lips tonight.
kind of like all the ambiguousness.
I think that's what
it's. It probably sounds kind of frustrating when it's described. You know that again, Videodrome, the source of the signals, never really talked about. You know, like what it is and who made it. And
yeah, how it works, or all of those details are sort of left aside,
which kind of works. I mean, I feel like for this movie, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
Or at least I found myself, you know, at the end of the movie not being concerned that I didn't have that information.
Right.
You know.
I think it works in two ways. One, because you don't get bogged down in those details. You know, you're sort of, your proxy is James Woods.
Yeah, yeah.
And as he loses control mentally of what's going on, so do you.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that you don't have all the information in order to fully put yourself in James Woods' place. You can't have all the information.
You know as much as he knows.
Right. You have to be as confused as he is in order for it to work. But it also, it provides, I think it lets the movie make a statement, if you want to assume that it's making a statement, about the way in which the stuff we watch affects us.
Yeah, and also that we don't necessarily know the source of that, you know?
Right, yeah.
So...
Yeah, we sort of take things that we see on certain levels, you know. We accept something as factual, or we accept something as fiction, mm-hmm. you know. And we assign all of the things that we watch to these different categories, right? Yeah. But really, there's nothing. The only thing that really controls that is our own perception.
Yeah.
It's how we assign these things, how we categorize this stuff that we watch.
Yeah.
And where we how we interpret it in our minds, we're the only ones who are actually doing that. So if that's not working right, you know, then perception completely shifts.
Yeah.
Which is what happens to James Woods, basically.
Yeah, it's sort of fascinating.
Yeah.
And I liked the movie. As I was watching, I was kind of like thrown by it, you know.
Mm.
And it's one of those movies that I myself don't really seek out very often, you know, mm-hmm. and so I'm glad that you picked this one because it is a really strange movie,
you know, and
not just because of the sort of horror aspects, the gruesome effects and stuff mm-hmm. like that, like, but really just overall, it's sort of off kilter, has this strange sense to it. Mm-hmm. The pacing is odd, you know.
Yeah.
There's no... a lot of times you sort of feel lost within it,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, again, I think works.
Mm-hmm.
Works in its favor. And from what I understand, it's pretty well received when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it didn't, you know, it definitely wasn't a major success.
No.
But none of David Cronenberg's movies have been major successes. And I think they kind of assumed that going in,
you
know, that this was going to be. And this was his first major movie, I think. His first big studio production. He'd done a bunch of underground stuff.
I read that it was supposed to come out. It's a Universal picture.
Uh-huh.
And it was supposed to come out the same year as E.T., mm-hmm. And there were a few other sort of pretty big...
The Thing, which was also a Universal movie. Yeah.
But then got pushed.
Yeah. Probably because they weren't sure how to package it.
Yeah,
how to promote it. And I don't think anybody's ever figured that out entirely.
No. No, but people have found it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Through means probably a lot like I mean, I knew of it, but I wouldn't have seen it probably had I not seen it in that class.
Sure. You
know? But I had seen scenes from it, and so it had that sort of... pedigree behind it.
Yeah.
You know, there. And well, and speaking of pedigree, like David Cronenberg, if you have seen a David Cronenberg movie, you kind of have a better sense of what to expect the next time you watch a David Cronenberg movie. So I had seen some of his movies before this. Mm-hmm. But Rick Baker, I got so excited.
I was going to say, Rick Baker.
So excited to see Rick Baker's name.
Special effects, who did, makeup artist, right?
Kind of paved the way for Stan Winston, I think, in a lot of ways. He really did. So he did American Werewolf in London, which is probably still,
one of the most impressive.
Yeah, werewolf transformations. Yeah. I barring any CG, it's the best ever.
What's kind of amazing, well, even within a lot of CG,
I think
what's incredible about that is the time spent on that shot and the how slow it happens, but how that like makes it all the more horrific.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it doesn't happen it's like not in just a series of dissolves. Yeah. It's painful. Like, you get the sense that this guy is in pain.
It's not Bruce Banner bursting into the Hulk. Yeah. You know, and it's not I can summon an image of the Twilight trailer where like the werewolf guy is running.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He jumps into the air and he's
and
a wolf.
Suddenly he's a wolf.
No,
yeah.
It's not that. It's like this painful, like terrifying transformation that sort of
literally
across.
Like every component of his body is shifting and morphing.
And you watch him regarding it, right?
Yeah, he's like, what the hell's going on with my hands? Yeah. So Rick Baker, love his stuff. And this is, I don't know if this is his best work, but it's definitely some unique stuff.
The score is by Howard Shore,
who
went on to do the Lord of the Rings score.
That's right.
Among other things. I think Cronenberg uses him a lot because he also did The Fly.
It's a very electronic score.
I saw his name right at the front, you know, like, oh, it's like Howard Shore. That's awesome. And then there was a moment in the movie where I'm like, I realized I'm listening to Howard Shore score. And I'm like, this is Howard Shore? Like it was so electronic, so synth. And I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but it was so synthesized, you know?
Yeah.
And it was very simplistic in that there were a lot of scenes where he'd just like sit on a note, you know, and let that sort of permeate the entire scene in a pretty ominous way. That I thought was very cool.
It's great. A lot of good dread building, I think.
Absolutely.
Overall, throughout the movie. And James Woods is great. I think all the people in it are great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good acting all around.
It's the other element that I thought was also somewhat prescient was the talk about the tumor and everything. And I don't think that that's something that we've ever really fully ascribed to television. I mean, probably in the early days of television, that was like a concern.
Right.
And then probably
rays.
In the early days of cable, there was, you know, or satellite dishes and stuff like that. There was probably some concern about it.
Right.
But I thought it was interesting. Like, I kept thinking about all the concern about that people have now about cell phones and wireless transmission and stuff. And then it kind of made me wonder, like, you know, are we just really paranoid about this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, like, here they are, you know, talking about the paranoia surrounding these television signals. And as far as we know, nothing's ever really come of it substantially. You know, nothing significant, a huge number of people developing conditions as a result of it. So are we really just, you know, is this all just paranoia? But I thought that was interesting. There were a lot of parallels that seemed to come to light in the course of watching it this time.
It's hard. I think that takeaway requires a second viewing because it is really hard to break through the sort of 80s patina on this. You know what I mean?
Like,
it is very, like you said at the beginning, it's so much of its time.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the thing that's hitting you in the face.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get past that on the first viewing, I think. So
it's so much of its time that it seems almost otherworldly now.
Yeah,
like it seems like it's set in a fantasy world.
Well, and also because it's sort of, even though it's of its time, it also seems to be somewhat in the future, you know, where like, or an alternate 1983.
Yeah, exactly.
Where there is the cathode ministry or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And there's like these stations that are, you know, broadcasting this like crazy stuff, and that television shows are being developed and then sold by these agents who sort of go out and try to find the next show. And it seems like an alternate timeline.
Yeah,
to me.
It's almost as though where we would be if we hadn't developed the internet, you know, like if technology hadn't progressed beyond where it was at 1983, this is where it would have gone,
right?
Like presumably or possibly.
One of the great moments, I think, is James Woods. I can't remember where in the movie this happens, but he's outside and he stands next to this bum, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the bum's like, pay me some money to see my monkey dance or whatever. He doesn't dance for no money. And the monkey is a television set.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to get money for people watching his little TV that he's got. And it's just, that's a little thing that like establishes what that world is.
Yeah.
In a really
so obsessed
cool
with
way.
Television. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and like obviously the cathode ministry, which you've already been exposed to in the movie at that point, is kind of the main thing that kind of tells you, okay, so this is an important thing in society for some, you know.
Yeah.
Like the
society
homeless
is dependent upon
yeah,
it.
Need to go see TV in order yeah. to keep up, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but that was just a nice, I thought, more subtle detail that felt really cool.
You're right. It helps build the world, the universe. Yeah.
And it's funny because like it's a very small world.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only like 20 people in the movie or yeah. something. You don't see hardly anybody. But and yeah. and they seem to like just disappear arbitrarily.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Debbie Harry gets like second billing and she's in like maybe 10 minutes of screen time.
Right.
Yeah.
The implications don't go beyond Max Wren, you know,
yeah.
in the movie
yeah.
itself. And so like the world feels very small, but also very realized. And I think maybe the biggest glimpse you get of world outside of Max Wren is the trade show.
Yes.
At the end.
Yeah.
This is where he kills Convex.
Very Convex.
And there's this weird show, like a stage show to introduce Convex. Right?
That's a great scene.
Yeah. Just over. It's weird. There's a lot of weird stuff in the movie, but good weird stuff.
Good weird
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the archive.
Oh, yeah.
It's good weird stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's a thumbs up on Videodrome, right?
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
It's a thumbs up. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, I will be completely honest, and I'll say this movie is not for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But if you're into sort of cult films and
cult flicks and trash picks.
Yeah, exactly. and that's not to say this is a poorly made movie.
Right.
But it is a sort of niche thing. I don't think it really is for everyone. But
yeah,
it's good. I think if you're into this kind of movie, you will be pleased with what you see.
Nice. Let's go see it.
And that's all we can tell you about Videodrome.
Put Videodrome in the archive.
Do it.